welcome to this week's Football Fans Podcast with myself, your host, Jordan Jarrett Bryan. On the pod this week, I'm joined by Chelsea regular fan, Gabriel. What are you saying, Gabriel?
I'm good, man. No trophies for Tottenham this year, so I'm in the green.
Is that you coming in?
That's not coming in. Shout out to Oli.
Jeez. Wow, okay. But yeah, it's true. joined by United fan Josh.
Good win for your mob on Friday.
Yeah, I had a great weekend. Great way to start the weekend. Bit of moonwalking.
Can I just say, even though it was at our stadium, I've got to give Lingard maximum respect with that. Like, even that made me think, like, nah, you're a G. Fair play. Bastard. And we've also got returning Newcastle supporter Clinton. What are you saying?
Oh, I can't say much, really.
No, you can't.
As much as I want to give you sticking back, like, I can't really. We crash out of the cup as well, so
that's a standard Newcastle in the cup. It's, you know, in and out.
Yeah, exactly. You know, we're in the cup and then we're out the cup and that's it. Season's done.
Season's over.
I've got nothing more to say.
Fair enough. Right, before we get into our drive-bys, guys, I want to just make a very brief shout out and say that we'd like to pass on our best wishes to the family and friends of Emiliano Sala. He was due to sign for Cardiff this transfer window. As we all know, his plane has gone missing, and the authorities, after ending the search last week, saw today have announced that they will be doing another operation to try and find the plane as well. So hopefully, I think it's very unlikely now, we'll all agree that there'll be any sign of life, but if he is alive, hopefully they will find him, and that can have a positive resolution. So our thoughts, obviously, from the FFP with the family and friends of Mr. Salah. Okay, let's get into some drive-bys, guys. Now, let's start with you, Clinton. Let me ask you, would you take Premier League clubs out of the League Cup?
It all depends on the level of that they're playing at. I mean, for a club like us, like Newcastle United, nope. Because we definitely need a cup. I mean, it's been, what, 52 years since we've won anything. A long, long time. And I'm sure it'll be another 52 before we win anything anyway. So, answer that, no. Mm-hmm. But I can see for, you know, the bigger clubs around the room, you probably disagree with me.
But even the little, yep. even the clubs down in the, you know, the bottom five clubs in the Premier League, for them, is the League Cup just an extra group of games they just don't need or don't want? And would it maybe boost up, help the teams in the lower leagues that, you know what I mean, they might get the chance to get to a semi-final or a final?
I can only talk from my point of view as a Newcastle United fan who tends to be in those bottom five positions. So, for us, it's a good and healthy distraction from, you know, getting beat fours and fives and nils. I mean, we don't get four or five nils, but from getting beaten most of the time. Sure. Do you know what I mean? If you're playing in a league cup and you're playing up against, I don't know, let's say, for example, Blackburn Rovers or whatever, you know what I mean? It's good to have that winning feeling again going on to playing Man City the next game. Do you know what I mean? So it's quite healthy for us. So, yeah.
All right, so we're just watching, guys, that are listening to this. We're watching the FA Cup draw. Well, let's just pause the drive-by. Chelsea have just been drawn with United. Josh.
Ooh. Good draw. Mm-hmm.
Gee, talk to me. What's what you reckon?
Home win all day.
So if United are going to win the cup, they're going to have to do it the hard way this year.
They couldn't even beat Jose United, so.
It's still Jose's United.
Interesting. And also, we've seen that Millwall and who was it? Millwall and
Wimbledon.
And Wimbledon. Whoa. So that could be tasty. We'll get to Millwall in just a second. And let's pick up the drive-bys now. G, have Marko Arnautovic's people played a blinder in getting him a new contract?
Oh man, I mean, this, I don't know why you made this a drive-by. This is just the most obvious straightforward thing. We could just say yes and end it. But no, the thing about it for me is if I'm a West Ham fan, like, I'm a little embarrassed by it. He's come out yesterday, he's made the video, yeah, I want to play for you guys, blah, 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 blah. He basically sold your club down the river. He wanted the pitch, he was like, bye. Probably got, I don't know how much his wages are increased by, but I'm sure it's good.
It's a nice sum.
So that's some. He probably never ever wanted to go to China, and so yeah, absolutely. I mean, he's played a blinder, but I'm sure the West Ham fans will be happy with it anyway.
And also, it saves me having to use up 4 points in my fantasy, because these are my team as well, so I get to keep in my team. Josh, just mentioned Millwall. We all saw the videos that were going around, what happened in their game of their FA Cup win against Everton on the weekend. Would you throw Millwall out of the cup? Are we at that point now where long for the talking, long for the?
Why did I get that one?
Yeah. Would you just guess? Would you, if you were the FA, would you say there's enough evidence from the videos that have been seen? You know what? You're at the cup.
Okay, I wouldn't throw them out the cup because that, I think, before you do that, before that penalty is set at the start of the season, every club needs to know that's the punishment.
Mm.
I would say though that at their next cup games, they shouldn't be allowed to any fans.
So I'm not sure if the game is away or
so if it's at home.
If it's at Wimbledon,
it doesn't matter.
If it's at Wimbledon,
if it's away, their fans ain't allowed to be there.
Mm.
And I think they should also be penalising their upcoming home games in the league as well.
Okay,
that's but I think your idea is good. Mm. It's an interesting one, but I don't think you can implement that half without everybody knowing at the start of the season this is going to be the penalty.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool. Let's kick off with the pod now, guys. Let's talk Chelsea. I'm really interested in Mauricio Sarri, and I want to talk about Morata, who today was announced has gone to Atletico Madrid on an 18-month loan deal. But to start with you, G.
Mm-hmm.
Sarri ball, is it a myth, or is what you're trying to do a myth, or is it a case of once again the Chelsea dressing room is just so strong he's not able to implement what he wants to get across in that team?
Honestly, Jordan, I think it's too early to say. I think it was a myth because when he has really a crux of players who are not really suited to necessarily playing that type of football would be particularly harsh. I'd think he'd need a few windows in order to kind of transition from what we were and what we have been for like 10 years, which is essentially a counter-attacking team, to a team who dominates possession. I actually think overall, apart from maybe the last month or two, like you would say that if you looked at it as a whole and if you'd be fair, you'd say he'd done okay with what he's had. I also won't go as far as to say criticise the club and say they haven't backed him, because I guess you look at getting Higuain, Kepa and Jorginho, effectively you've given him some people would say that in the olden days you might call that a spine. I think it would just need some time to kick in. I've said, you know, and I don't want to seem as if I'm all hairy fairy about this, you know, you guys know how I feel. I've been bored to death watching us the last few weeks. I find him stubborn, I find the way we play predictable, I find everything about what he does predictable to a certain extent, from our kickoffs to our substitutions. I can project everything every single game. But before I call it a myth, before I say it isn't going to work, I'm going to give him a bit more time to get more players in, to coach players that we have at the moment, and then make projections on what I say. However, if we're still here talking about the same, if I'm still here saying next year he's still taking off Kovacic for Barkley at 65 minutes, or we're still kicking off and trying to hit Willian every single kickoff.
When you mentioned that, I started looking out for that, and you're right.
If we're still here talking about that this time next year, then yeah, it is a myth. But I think he's only been here 6 months, give him some time.
It's too soon. Clinton, so G mentions the word stubborn, and I think a lot of commentators and pundits and football fans have said that Kante is the best DM in the world. Why would you sacrifice the best DM in the world to accommodate your guy? Where I alluded to this last week on the show, where do you stand on the principle of the team have to adapt to and trust what the manager is trying to implement, or does the manager have to assess what he's got in his team and work with the ingredients that he's got, even if it goes against what he as a manager is all about?
I think it's the latter, really. It's got to be the latter. I mean, to play what, Kante right mid, that's criminal, isn't it?
Right centre mid,
right centre mid.
Yeah.
And what planet is he right centre mid?
It's based on what Sarri wants to play. I think a lot of people are taking, like, you know, saying, well, you know, comparing Kante to Jorginho and saying, well, Jorginho is never going to be as good defensively as Kante. Yeah, but that's not how his team play. Like, he doesn't have a DM in that sense. He has a deep line playmaker, and you can't play Kante as a deep line playmaker. It's just not going to work. You are sacrificing some of Kante's strengths, but also Kante can be very good on the high press as well. yes, attacking wise, he's still, you know, he's never going to be an attacking midfielder.
Yeah. Well, let me just ask Linton that on Kante. Do you think that Kante's position or Kante's strengths can be improved and changed into becoming a more offensive minded? Because it seems to me that he's trying to make him more effective in the final third.
No.
Do you think Kante's got it in his locker to change his game?
I don't think he has. Look, he's won the league at Leicester in DM. He won the league at Chelsea at DM. Why, if it's not broke, why are you trying to fix it? Like, leave him where he is. Like, I'm sure you've got enough offensive players in Hudson-Odoi, Ruben off the street.
That's not how he plays. That's not how Sarri, but does he?
He has to, man.
You think he does?
Until he gets a couple of windows to bring in the players that he wanted, then he has to adapt to what he's got. Sorry, but he has to. Yeah. You're now allowing all of these good players to go out, like Hudson-Odoi, will he, won't he? You got Ruben off the cheek, will he, won't he? You got all of these good offensive players, but yet you're still so stubborn, as you kind of alluded to, that he wants to stick to his guns and how he's playing. But at the same time now, you're sacrificing the likes of Kante, who's won the league twice, in his preferable position. It doesn't make sense to me.
Josh, where do you stand on this? I think we've had this discussion before. Does the team have to realise that this manager has been trusted by the owners to come in and win the way that he does it and was relatively successful doing it at Napoli? Or is he just being blatantly stubborn? It's just like, we can all see that Kante should be playing here, playing in his strongest position.
I think the Kante thing is interesting to me, because I don't necessarily think that Kante is really a DM in the traditional sense of the word, right? Mm. Because he kind of like is a box to box midfielder, but just more defensive, right? So I think it's okay where he's playing him, but he's forcing him too high up the pitch. That's all. So I don't even think it's a problem if Jorginho plays where he is as a deep line playmaker and Kante is a ball winner midfielder, but drops deeper and covers Jorginho defensively. Mm. I think, but that's what annoys me about Sarri, because that to me isn't changing your whole setup. That's a tweak.
So you could play them together effectively.
Yeah.
And
what's the problem?
Have Kante sweeping up around.
Jorginho can do his job and Kante can cover for him for his defensive weaknesses. Yeah. Like, what's the problem? I don't understand. That to me is what is a red flag when I look at managers being stubborn. Like, that to me is like just pure stubbornness. How do you not see that?
Mm. I mean, what he said, and because I know previously in Sarri ball, apparently they've done 4-2-3-1. And what he said a few weeks back is that we don't know how to play it with 4-3-3. Yeah. And until we master it, he wouldn't consider changing it.
Yeah.
But that is just, again, going back to what Josh said, a sign of stubbornness, to be honest with you, because, okay, what if we never master it? Are you going to keep on waiting? And I think it is sad when you see your best two players being played in ways that don't get the best out of them. Mm-hmm. In Hazard and Kante in previous weeks, and your manager really kind of sticking to his guns and kind of thinking, well, I know more than everyone else. I mean, to a certain extent, like I said, you have to kind of stick to your philosophy. But as Josh said, that is a tweak. It's not reinventing your philosophy,
how you play your game. Yeah.
Nothing to say though is like in just the question, like in general, like what should the manager adapt? Should the players adapt? I think there's not. It's fluid.
Okay.
Like when
both can compromise.
Yeah. When you come to a club, like you have a vision of where you want to get to. You don't have the players to do that yet. Like, so use tactics with the players that you have until you can get to where the players that you need. Mm. Like, why are you going to sacrifice being able to win football games for your principle of this is the way we need to play? It doesn't make any sense.
But don't the kind of football men of, because we did a show last week about Bielsa and about men of his type, and
yeah,
they don't compromise. And if it means losing games in the short term, they're prepared to do that because this is how I believe football should be played.
I get that, but I think you can have a philosophy. I think basically what I'm saying is like not being adaptable and not being flexible is a weakness in any manager. Yeah. You can have a philosophy if you have a very rigid setup way of playing. What's happened with Sarri is that I don't even really think they're playing Sarri ball. He's figured out a way to play like with the players he has, which was working because he's so rigid. Everyone's figured it out, and now when you play Chelsea, you know exactly how they're going to play and how to counter it. So that's a weakness as a manager if you are not flexible.
That's fair. Clinton, one of the things that baffles me a little bit about Sarri is that I thought, and G can correct me if I'm wrong here, but I thought the whole point of bringing in someone like Sarri was that he wanted to develop players. I think there might have been a quote where he said he doesn't like transfers. He's not really interested in buying players. He much prefers working with players and improving players. And that, I thought, was music to Roman's ears, because it's like, well, I don't want to spend big anymore, and this guy can make good players better. But yet he's still spent quite a bit of money and he's bringing in players. It's not working out. Is bringing in people like Higuain a sign maybe that maybe he's struggling to develop the players that he had?
Totally. Because again, what, Higuain is what, 31? So you're bringing in someone who's 31. Yes, they've worked together and all the rest of it, but you've got to convey a bit of talent. Like, you guys send players out on loan and make money off your youth team all the time. You know what I mean? Imagine if you kept all the players that you've had over the past, what, 4 or 5 years, even from the likes of Tam Abraham to Shalabar and all the rest of it. Even Kennedy, who we've got on loan. I mean, he's, trust me, he's not doing much. Too fair.
And neither is Shalabar, and neither is...
I'm saying, under a good manager with those players, come on, they've got prospects. And even as I was going back to the Ruben Loftus-Cheek thing, like, he had to go to Crystal Palace to get some game time to come back to you guys. Like, imagine if you kept all of those players with a good manager who, like, let's say, for example, Pochettino, who's definitely one for nurturing talent. You could get the best out of him and save Roman a bit of dosh.
But Pochettino is not one for winning, and he's said that in
neither
the
Sarri. Neither Sarri, though. Well,
what's to be fair, Sarri don't want to think either.
But the Ruben Loftus-Cheek argument was based on last season. It was based on Conte, who was a winner, and he didn't think that Ruben could get into his team. It's difficult because there is always this kind of debate, and you know, Chelsea have made, you know, there are various players that have left the, that you think, well, you know, they could have done a job for the team. But there is an element of Chelsea want to win now compared to other clubs who are willing to wait 3, 4, 5, 10 years before they win something. And due to that, you're always going to have players who might leave. And I think the club accept that.
But I thought the whole point of bringing them in was that you have all these young, talented players coming through.
Yep.
And Sarri's not interested in spending 80 million on one player. So
I think he was slightly misquoted with that. He did say what you said, but I think what his point was, because they were asking him at the time, how do you feel about not having control of transfers? And he said, I'm not interested in transfers. I'm interested in developing players.
Okay.
So the point was more around, I'm here to coach rather than I'm here to manage the transfers.
No, let's be real though. Giroud and Morata.
Well, I was coming to that.
What are you working with there, bro? Like, you need to dash them.
Yeah, but okay, look at my boy Giroud over there at Chelsea, right?
He's your boy, take him back.
Believe me, I'll take him on a heartbeat, but that's a separate thing. I still think that a Giroud and a Hazard combination isn't going to win you a Premier League, but I think it could do a lot. But if you're not going to go out and spend 80 million on a striker, for me, that is a combo that should be doing better than it is.
Yeah.
That should be doing, I don't know why that hasn't worked out. Well, I was worried when you got Giroud because I thought he's a perfect foil for someone like Hazard.
The thing is with Giroud is to get the best out of him, you have to play direct and we don't. So, I mean, yeah, he hasn't scored many goals this season. He's not going to score many goals while we're passing it side to side rather than getting the ball into the box to him. So he's almost surplus to that system apart from the last 10 minutes when we get desperate. And even when in those last 10
respect
minutes...
Respect my boy.
Even in the last 10 minutes when we get desperate. It's funny because when we played against United and we got the last minute equaliser 2-2, Sarri actually complained that we went too direct to get that result.
Okay.
And it's almost like he would rather take Giroud out to say, no, you're going to play my way and not get a result than put Giroud in and play that way. So Giroud and Sarri just can't work together as well.
That's fair. So then what is a Higuain then?
Well, I guess he would see Higuain as someone who can hold up the ball, but can also be a part of the play, can make good runs, can link up. I mean, whether he's the Higuain of the Real Madrid days, I mean, I don't know, but
we'll get to him in a minute, Higuain. Yeah. You mentioned Morata, Josh.
Yeah.
Pound for pound, is Morata the worst transfer ever in Premier League history?
Oh, Jesus.
Nah, that's harsh.
What, tell me a transfer worse than that.
Oh, we've had a few. We've
70 million.
We never spent 70 million.
Mikel Silvestre to Arsenal.
Oh.
70 million.
Mikel Silvestre to Arsenal.
No, forget about the money. Forget about. All right, you can't forget about the money.
No, you can't.
You can't forget about the money. But but I think there's been worse transfers.
Pound for pound.
Yeah, because
Andy Carroll scored some goals at Liverpool
for 35 million was more insane at the time than Morata to Chelsea.
Yeah.
No, I don't disagree with that, but what I'm saying is, having seen Morata's tenure at Chelsea, can you think of a player that's gone for that as much money failed as badly as that?
Like, you would say Shevchenko.
How much was he?
30 million. No, but for Shevchenko, weren't wet. Shevchenko scored 4 goals in one game.
He did all right at Chelsea. Like, I'm not having Shevchenko. Morata.
Nah, Shevchenko's up there.
Shevchenko
was the 70 million of back in the day.
Yeah, no, he was. It was expensive. And even Fernando Torres, but Fernando Torres scored like really important goals.
Champions League,
Chelsea.
Champions League,
he just didn't get many leagues.
70 million is a lot.
If you look at it like this, you were never ever going to make the money back on Shevchenko. So in the end, we had to release him on loan and go. We're going to get the bulk of the money back from Morata if this works out with Atletico. Yeah, the deal that he gets. I mean, it's 50 plus add-ons, right? And we're not going to get those add-ons because you've never achieved anything. Yeah.
Yeah.
The deal to take him back to Atletico at the moment, there's a certain amount that they're paying on the loan, and there's a certain amount that they have to pay if they take him permanently. That will take to bring us the bulk of the money that we've paid in terms of the money. It'll bring us back to about £50 million.
So I'm told that Shevchenko scored 9 goals in 40 odd games. That's not a good record, but I would come back and say Shevchenko wasn't signed as your main man. He wasn't brought in as your main man.
Morata actually scored.
And he was in the twilight of his career, Shevchenko. Morata isn't meant to be coming into his prime.
The thing is, I always, when I look at, there are some transfers that just don't work out. Yeah?
Yeah.
But if you look at it, if you look at who was available at the time,
I'm not having this argument.
Especially after Lukaku.
But I was just going to say, I still think United wanted Morata and Chelsea wanted Lukaku. I don't know what ended up happening next. If you remember, United were very, very close to signing the Morata. I don't know what happened in the last minute.
Because they were asking stupid money.
It was the money
money for a striker who is a number one striker who has a record of scoring like 20 league goals in league competition. And he's never done it in his entire career. Never. Everywhere he's been. Never ever has he demonstrated that he can be a number one striker at a club. It was a gamble. He should have cost about 35 million. As soon as you get even 40 million, even we had a conversation in the group the season before we talked about Morata, thinking that he's a decent player. He looks like as a prospect, but he's not
the guy.
He's not the guy. He's not going to go and pay 65 million.
He's not proven
to be the guy. He's not a proven goal scorer. Yeah,
but you know what? They smelled desperation.
Yeah, exactly.
We can take money from these lot.
I think it's up there as the worst transfer of all time in the Prem, but
fair enough.
So you mentioned Higuain. What's happening there then? How hopeful? Because I'm not so sure this is a good move, man. And this smells a bit of desperation as well.
But I mean, he's here on loan initially for 6 months. If he doesn't do the business, he's gone. You know what I mean? It couldn't have got much worse.
Roman's learning.
It could have got much worse than what it was before. And I still think, I mean, he hasn't done well at Milan. I think his record recently, but even then, like, it's 8 goals in 22. It's not like the biggest disaster of all that. I'm willing to go with it. I think he could score the goals that will get us into the top four.
See, Clinton, the thing for me about the Higuain deal is that a lot of the criticism towards Hazard to Morata was that he's soft. I'm not going to curse, but he's a bit of a, you know what I'm going to say.
Mm-hmm.
He's got no heart and he's not about it. And even Giroud, some people say decent with his feet, but he's not got the balls to really be the guy.
Mm.
If you speak to a lot of people, especially Argentinians, about Higuain, they label that same thing at him. He's a bottler. He's very, very talented technically, but he doesn't really have the heart to be the guy when it really matters. So for me, you're getting a guy out that you called weak to bring in a guy that's known for being a little bit of a big game bottler. Is this just more desperation from Chelsea?
It doesn't make any sense to me. And to be honest, I'm pro Tammy anyway. Tammy all day.
Tammy Abraham,
listen. Wait. If you're gonna
big shot.
No.
I'm not saying you're wrong, I'm just saying it's a big shot.
I'm just saying.
I'm saying it's wrong. Tammy Abraham couldn't even hold down the place on Swansea last year.
Bro.
He did get a bad injury to be
honest. No, but that was his first.
You can't get into the Swansea team on a regular basis.
No, but this is the whole Chelsea and like
you exactly. Big thank you.
But anyway, let's say what.
carry on that conversation. Nah, it's cool.
No, right. No, I say that. All right, there's Harry Kane.
Yeah.
Jesse Lingard, Jamie Vardy, all at loan in the Championship
mm-hmm.
at Leicester. Couldn't get a game. Kane weren't scoring goals. Lingard couldn't get off the bench. Vardy couldn't get off the bench.
Yeah.
Right? Because they were like, when you first, like, Tammy Abraham's first season in the Premier League, struggling club Swansea, a club that got relegated. He scored a few goals.
He scored five goals.
He looked decent. He's gone down to the Championship. He's looking like a player now that's scoring goals in Championship. I'm not saying like right now he should be a number one striker.
But that's what I'm saying.
I think you should call him back and he should be number two to Higuain right
there
now.
There we go.
Right now.
There we go. I'd actually think, because if he's going to play number two to Higuain, he's not going to get any minutes. I think he should stay where he is.
Well, that's
get
fair,
the minutes
fair,
and maybe play, and maybe come back and do the number two next year.
Yeah.
Just finally, speaking of young players, are you concerned, G, that a lot of young players that want to go to a club, for example, mm-hmm. may now look at people like Hudson-Odoi and think, Chelsea have got a good record at developing young players, but they're never going to get into the first team and make an impression.
Yeah.
I'm going to go to another team instead.
It's funny. I think if we do lose Hudson-Odoi, it will be because of that reputation, because actually for him, he hasn't actually been treated that bad in comparison to other players. He's actually had a decent amount of starts. For what I understand behind the scenes, maybe, and I don't know whether this is true or not, but similar to Solanke, there was a contract dispute, and the contract dispute kind of led to him getting less games than he might have wanted to get. And now, obviously it's getting closer to the point where he's running out of his contract and people are thinking, oh, damn, put him back in the team. Mm-hmm. But at the same time, he has got, for an 18-year-old, he's not been starved the first. I mean, how many games would you've expected him to play? He started five games this year and came on in 10 other games. Let's say you extrapolate that, we're about halfway through. If he got 10 starts this season and 30 appearances overall, that wouldn't be so bad for an 18-year-old with the amount of competition that's in front of
but
him.
But isn't the point there that he can't get minutes in a team that's not doing great? And if you've got William and Pedro, who I think are still decent players, ahead of you, he's thinking, well, those guys aren't ripping up trees.
Yeah.
Why am I not getting more minutes?
But then he's going to go to Bayern Munich, where I guess Robin and Ribery will probably play now until the end of the season and then leave. I think one of William or Pedro is going to leave. Hazard's probably going to leave as well. The opportunity is probably equally as good at Chelsea as it is with Bayern Munich, but I think the reputation has kind of gone before.
Is it a Sancho effect?
He's had his head turned, because I was speaking to a Chelsea scout last night, and he apparently at the start of the season he was happy with 12 starts, that's fine, that'll do me. And then obviously you hear about Bayern Munich, okay, let's see what they're saying, agent's gone out there, oh, this is going to get done, and that's where his head's got turned. So now it's got to a stage where, I've got a team that's willing to play me week in, week out, or it's kind of if and buts.
But
maybe
will they play
Chelsea
week in, week out?
I think he'll get quite a lot of games at Bayern Munich, because they've already started to phase out Ribery and Robin. Like, they've got another kid from Canada, and then they've got Gnabry, who gets relatively quite a lot of games. And you probably look at him and think, how fancy I could get Gnabry out of that team. So I think the main issue with Hudson-Odoi is, like, at the start of the season, up until relatively recently, he wasn't getting any games. This whole problem with the contract dispute is probably what's caused the problem, because he's probably sat there and thought, these guys are mugging me off. All right, they want to give me games now that I'm saying I'm leaving. But how genuine are they? Mm-hmm. Are they really?
I guess it depends on what part of the argument, because I mean, he's come into the team recently. Yeah, when the contract disputes come up, but also when we've had injuries, which is usually when a young player gets his chance. Right, it's really difficult. I'd like to think that Sarri wouldn't sit there and have a good player and be like, well, there's a contract dispute, so I wouldn't play him. But these are the things that you hear by the scene. And we do have history for it. I don't know what version of the story is true. I would say that it's a shame that we lose him. But I'd also say, like, I don't know if it's like we're losing like a Wayne Rooney or Michael Owen, a child prodigy.
Yeah, I do think that has been blown up quite
a lot. Across Europe, they're saying that they reckon he's better than Jadon Sancho. They reckon he's got the potential to be better than.
Even Jadon Sancho, it's not Messi at 18, is it?
Jadon Sancho was like very, very well known, being like one of the best prospects in his age group in England and possibly the world. Like, very much well known. Higher rated than Phil Foden at City. Like everyone knew. Like
so yeah, okay. Yeah. let's move on now, guys. Let's talk about Newcastle. Clinton. Newcastle United. What's the point? What's the point? Oh, seriously, I mean, I gave West Brom heat for a few years, and I'll repeat my kind of reasoning for asking the question. Don't bring through any young players. Don't play attractive football. Don't make any sexy signings. Up and down, scraping relegation most years. Do nothing in the cups. Whinge a lot. What's the point? As a Newcastle fan, genuinely, what is the point of Newcastle United? What are they bringing to football in this country?
Jordan, I want to disagree with you, but I have to agree.
I know you do.
I have to literally
No, we'll come back to you, Clinton, one second. But G, what one of my descriptions there was incorrect?
I'm not saying anything, says where there's a club, a point to every single club.
So what's the point?
No, I'm going to give you my card. Tell me.
We'll talk later.
So Clinton, say there's no point to your club. Come on.
No. I want to hear from the Newcastle fan. What is the point of Newcastle United?
With all those points you made, they're all valid points. Like, literally, we're middle of the road. We're not going up. We're not winning a league. We're not winning any cups. We're not going any. Hopefully, not going down. What is the point? Like, people are starting to lose. No, listen, guys. Talking from your privilege.
No, but it's disheartening to hear this.
I know, it is disheartening.
But is it untrue?
it's not untrue. That's the thing. Like, literally, turning up to games. You're chanting about Ashley or about how he's a DDD beep beep beep, and then literally you just watch your team lose, and then you're seeing, you know, reject Stoke players try and put the ball in the back of the net. People know who it is.
Stoke players. Oh.
Listen. We see. You know, cast off from Chelsea, trying to do a madness and miss penalties in the 90th minute. Shout out Kennedy. And then like it's just mad. Like I don't understand. Like seeing. We went out in the cup against Watford this weekend, just gone. We played a weakened side. Like, how can we play a weakened side? Like, our side's weak already. It doesn't make any sense. So, we played a weakened side. It doesn't make no sense. But the fact is, like, cup competitions is our only break away from the whole normality of losing in the league, like I was saying earlier. So, talking about the League Cup. So, I don't understand why Rafa's got to get a bit of this. In fact, yeah, Rafa's getting a bit of this.
Because last time you were on here, you were defending Rafa hard.
I was, because he's my boy, but at the same time, like, he needs to kind of, I know he gets the fans, but sometimes he's got to see it from his own point of view. Because, you know, he's talking about stubborn manners and all the rest of it. He is stubborn manager 101. Like, you literally stay to the same formation all the time, 4-2-3-1, come rain, sleet, snow, all the rest of it. He'll stick to the same thing all the time, and it's easy to read. And again, in the FA Cup, you've seen how many teams, Premier League teams, got knocked out. That was our opportunity to actually do something if we actually played a half decent side. But anyway,
so this is all in the context, obviously, of the fact that you've got an owner that does or doesn't, want to sell the football club. Therefore, he's reluctant to invest money, and therefore it's hard for Rafa Benitez to really maybe do. I'm not giving him a pass because I think he has had a long pass off the fans of Newcastle, so I'm not giving him a pass. But if he's got no money to start with in the first place, he's surely limited in what he can do. So I'll ask again, going to games every single week whenever you do go, I'm not saying you should stop supporting your football club. I'm slightly being disingenuous, but what do you get out of supporting the club? You get nothing back.
No, I know. Like, realistically, I know why Newcastle fans go.
I'm laughing at them.
No, seriously. Like,
I'm offended for you, man. What's the point of supporting your club? Come on, man.
It's not that deep in the grand scheme of things, but kinda I know
is.
Why.
Kind of is, really.
No.
I'm joking.
I'm joking. Yeah. But I know why
that's,
Newcastle.
That's slightly filthy. That's why I'm kind of saying it, because I think to myself,
the
whole point of supporting a football club is one of two things. If you're not getting trophies, at least give me something that's enjoyable. You're not getting trophies or enjoyable moments.
It's supposed to be the release, isn't it, on the weekend? It's entertainment. That's what it's supposed to be. But we're not getting entertained. We're not winning games. We're not seeing signings. So again, I'll go back to your point. What is the point? Like, we're going to watch 90 minutes of football. It's not even sexy, attractive football. Gone are the days where you get sexy football.
Four frees
and, you know, Ben Arthur skilling up players. I mean, we had a little glimpse of it the other day when we had, was it Fabian Schär? Releasing his...
That goal was awful, but...
Mate,
yeah,
releasing his...
I get your point, though.
Is in a Hatton Ben Arthur there, and then that's it. We're back to reality, you know? Just
CG, I said earlier on that with Newcastle in their Premier League tenure, it's either been, you know, they had a couple of years at the top of the table where it's exciting, and it's like, yeah, oh, Newcastle, you know, decent team, good players, blah, blah, blah. Or they were just a basket case club, you know, fighting each other on the pitch,
Whoa. There's a clear divide in there.
Well, I'm just making the point that at least
there's a clear divide in there.
I'm just making the point.
Before Ashley, it was all good.
But I'm just making the point that at least before, whether they were good or they were bad, there was entertaining moments. Do you know what I mean? Even at their worst, there were still funny moments.
Yeah.
Now they haven't even got that anymore.
But the bad moments.
As a neutral, I want to see Newcastle.
But the bad moments have all come under Ashley. The good moments, yes, you could say 4-3 is a bad moment, but at the same time, we're still 4-3 contending for the title. Now we're losing, well, we lose 4-3, now we lose 4-0. But it's all under Ashley, that's the thing. So we've got nothing to hold on to. No glimmer of hope, no big name signing to look out for, or, you know, a decent cup run. So,
go on, G.
Yeah, go for it, man.
Yeah, I think maybe I'm coming from a nostalgic point of view, and maybe I'm thinking of 4-3, maybe I'm thinking of Kevin Keegan, but I still think there is a bit of, like, there is a bit of magic in the club, which maybe Mike Ashley, or not Mike Ashley personally, but this situation is holding back.
No, it's dead.
You don't think it's dead?
No, he's done it. He's sucked all the life.
Dead food.
All the juice, all the, oh my God, this could happen.
I just think, If he ever gets to the point where he does sell the club, and I know you doubt whether he actually will, like, it would only take a new owner to spend some money, and then
it's good to go. It's like all the pieces of the jigsaw puzzle, barring one. Literally, no. Yeah. Hear me out here. Like, in terms of fans, in terms of a really good manager, in terms of everything else, it's all there.
But that's what
we're
saying.
In the Premier League, it's literally just a guy comes in and says, oh, I fancy spending a bit of money here. Oh, it doesn't even have to be his own money. That's the thing. He could just spend Premier League money. Each team in here gets, what, 100 mil?
Plus, yeah.
100 mil plus. All you got to do is say, here, there, I'll keep my money to my one side, and that's it.
Yeah. That's what I say. For me, all the components are almost there, apart from just an owner who's willing to invest. Or a club who's willing to spend anything, to spend something, you know.
Josh, do you believe this idea though that if Rafa Benitez had £100 million transfer key to spend, the football would be better?
Don't do us like that. Come on,
because I'm not sure I'm having that.
No. Do you know what? Yeah, the problem. Rafa is also partly a problem. Football is obviously going to be better because you're going to have better players, but his football's kind of dead anyway.
Well, that's what I'm making.
But when you asked this question and you guys are just talking there, I kind of thought about this whole thing, and I thought, like, entertain, like, at least if you're not going to win a Premier League, or if you're not going to, like, I have an annoyance with clubs that don't want to win cups, like league cups. That just annoys me. If you're not going to, like, win the Premier League, if you just want to, because there's a bunch of clubs in the Premier League who are just there to collect TV money.
They've mugged it off.
Right,
yeah, yeah.
So basically, we're all paying Sky subscriptions. Right, and these, like, the TV money is basically users tuned in to watch TV to watch, like, so we want to be entertained. Like, Newcastle used to have, like, Faustino Asprilla, Ben Arfa, Ginola, even clubs that get relegated, like Middlesbrough, had Jorginho. Like,
that's something.
What's the reason to tune in to watch them? Like, what player am I gonna watch on that team? Like, if you tell me today Newcastle versus Burnley is on, I'm going to switch on Netflix. I ain't watching that.
I'm watching Rondon up front.
I'm watching my locks. Yeah, oh yeah. So, watching Rondon.
Top 15 striker.
So it's not even, but the point here to make is that it's not even really, I don't even necessarily think it's specifically a problem with the owner, Mike Ashley, or Rafa. I think it's a problem with, like, the Premier League is selling us something. Right, so I think it's a Premier League problem, because Newcastle are not the only club who does this. There's a bunch of clubs in the Premier League, I'm not going to name no names, that are there just collecting pee.
So that brings back to I think it was a drive-by I did about a year ago where I proposed that every single Premier League club should be told by Sky you have to spend a minimum in the summer.
I don't think you can do it by telling clubs that you have to spend a minimum because transfers isn't the only thing.
No.
Right? But, I don't know, throw out a crazy example here, like, basically, you want entertainment value. So let's just say, for instance, 0-0 gets you 0 points. Like I don't think it will work. Yeah. But the Premier League or the FA, they need to think about how they can tackle this problem. Because at the end, even you could say maybe like goal difference doesn't count, right? So in La Liga, I think if you finish at the same level, that you have to have a head to head. So therefore, if you're losing 1-0. You don't just want to set up shop and just say we're going to lose the game 1-0. You might want to go for it instead, right?
Yeah,
so
yeah.
They need to change out because it's annoying.
Well, somebody mentioned on the pod a week or two ago about the fact that, yeah, teams like Huddersfield and Cardiff just get away with collecting 100 mil P from the Premier League and just spending hardly any of it. So I think maybe it is a bigger problem than Newcastle. How's this going to end, Clinton? Because you don't believe that he actually wants to sell the club. And if that is true, this is just going to be a cycle that's going to go on and on. Rafa Benitez in his last year of his contract this year. Do you think he will leave if Ashley's there?
I don't think
or not leave, or do you think he will just not renew his contract?
Personally, I think he'll stay.
Why?
Because if you look at the top tier, like where he's already obviously wants to be aiming towards, he's not getting into any top five team anytime soon. Then you look into the next bit, he's not getting into any team that time soon. And then I truly believe that he's got like a rapport with the fans. So again, he wants to stay in England. He's made that perfectly clear time and time again. He's got family up in the Northwest. So
has he got a rapport with the fans or was he on a really nice contract?
Both. He's on a really nice contract, which I have to keep reminding people, like, he's not there on a voluntary basis. People keep saying, oh, poor Rafa, listen, he's not there on a voluntary basis. He's getting paid to stay there. Yes, he's got his grumbles, which we all have, but at the same time, you know, he's there to do a job and that's what he's meant to do. So, yeah, Ashley's not going anywhere anytime soon, put it this way.
I think Rafa's playing a blinder. I think Rafa's there just collecting his paycheck, yeah. And then he's basically blaming Ashley. Like saying, oh, I'm gonna.
I can't do anything.
How many,
like,
how many times has he said he's gonna quit? How many times has he said he's gonna resign? He's still here.
But
he's
I
been saying that
see
from
them.
Before they got relegated. He was been saying he's gonna leave.
He did.
But I can see Newcastle fans. I mean, I wouldn't say turning on Rafa. Turning on Rafa is too far. But I think they're starting to like say, hold on. Because I listened to a few phone-ins after the FA Cup, and there were a few fans saying he didn't have to play a team that bad.
They're slowly coming around.
Yeah. Like, yeah. Okay, you can't just blame it all on Ashley. You got to take some responsibility as well.
Because once the players go over the white line, it's nothing that Mike Ashley or Lee Charney can do. Like, it's down to you. Like, you pretty much do run the ship.
Yeah.
So, it is down to you, Rafa.
So you questioned my question.
Yeah.
I thought it was harsh.
It's not just harsh, it's brutal.
Life is brutal sometimes. Yeah. As a neutral, do you take Josh's point in that why would you watch Newcastle? You're saying there is a point. What is the point to Newcastle? You tell me.
But back to Josh's point, you know, there's so many other clubs that you could pick out exactly the same position. That's why they're picking on Newcastle if Evanville, because like at least
if Cardiff and Huddersfield, they've not got 5+ years of this situation. This is their first, second year in the Prem.
But I guess maybe Newcastle have got a bit of money in the bank with me from the 90s. You know, when you say what's the point of West Brom, I'm like, okay, I can't remember West Brom. Cyril Regis. That's the point. But Newcastle have got some recent money in the bank with me. So that's why I feel like, okay, like, come on, like, we know the situation Newcastle's in. We know the difficulties. I think just to say what's the point in them is a little premature for me.
Yeah, they got that 50,000 seat stadium.
They have got lots of fans.
Alan Shearer,
that's true. Kevin Keegan,
Nobby Solano.
I'd love it if we beat them.
Drop me out. You man are struggling.
Yeah,
big
but
time.
they need play some nice football. Also, do something.
We ain't got players to play nice football.
No, you have, man. Even like
who? I don't think they do.
Tell me five. Tell me five players.
You ain't got a single player in your squad.
No. Tell me five players.
All I want to see is to start nutmeg someone.
Tell me.
Like, bring a kid from the under 18s to do it. Like, oh, what's all this, man?
I mean, Bayern Munich wanted Kennedy, apparently, and you guys are gross.
Which Kennedy?
What, the wrestler or what?
not the one that I've seen. Boy, you can take him back.
Does anyone, just finally, Clinton thinks that Rafa will be there next year. Do you guys agree?
I don't see. Yeah, I think he's one of the highest paid players, managers in the Premier
League. He is.
Yeah. Like, he's on a wedge.
Where's he going to get that money elsewhere?
Exactly.
He'll definitely stay. I mean, he flirts with the idea of leaving because, you know, to put some pressure on and to kind of make himself seem like a saviour when he does stay. But I think he'll be here.
He's a smart guy.
Okay, we'll see. Now let's move on finally to another club that often makes me scratch my head. Let's talk about Everton, gentlemen. I want to know if there's a more weird club in the Premier League. to do so, I want to bring in Dave from the Blue Room podcast. Dave, how you doing, mate?
Are you okay? Sorry, I've got a manic dog bark.
cheers for coming on the pod, mate. I'll start with you, Dave. A bit like Clinton here, who supports Newcastle, how does it feel to kind of pretty much spend your money on a season ticket knowing that your season's going to end in January?
Well, obviously, going to the start of every season, not hoping that's going to be the case, but almost inevitably, it seems to be the case with Everton in recent seasons, mate. I mean, we're a really difficult club to support. There's so many false dawns. I mean, we had a billionaire investor take over Farhad Moshiri around 3 years ago now, and we thought that was going to be the tipping point for everything to change. And ultimately, I scratch my head and sit there sometimes and think, could any other club in the Premier League spend like £250 million on transfers and actually get worse?
it's a fair question, man. The reason why, Dave, I think Everton are a weird club is because I still think you're a big club. I think that title is slowly slipping away, but I still think you're a big club. But yeah, you spend big money, as you mentioned there. You've had some, you know, decent-ish managers in the last 3 or 4 years in particular, and you've got some good players in that squad. But yet, one game you lose at home to Tottenham, what was it, 6-3 or something?
6-2, yeah.
6-2, and then the next game I think you beat Burnley away 4-0, and then the game after that was at home. You just seem to have really random results, really random seasons. And I just find you a really, really odd club. Tell us a little bit more about what it is like supporting a club that has potential to break in that top six, but just never realises it, or not for a while anyway.
I think there's been a chronic mismanagement of the club. We decided, I don't know if you recall, when Leicester won the league, we sort of went and got a real scoop in getting their director of football in Steve Walsh. He come in, and most Evertonians regard him as being a bit of a fraud, to be honest, because aside from Magisa Gay, who he brought in, everyone else we signed was really obvious, and he went and splashed £45 million on Gylfi Sigurdsson, who I think actually has come good in relative terms recently. Obviously not to justify that sort of fee, but he's our top goal scorer this season, for instance. And then it's just been a complete mishandling of finances. Moshiri's put all his eggs in that basket in terms of recruitment, and we're paying the price for it now, because he come out at the recent AGM and said that he won't be bankrolling transfers the way in which he has in the recent past, and basically we have to sell for buy now. And I don't really blame him. I mean, if you invest that amount of money plus look to build a new stadium, which is thankfully progressing quite well, then, you know, why would you continue to put money in when you know it's not working? And we went and hired a guy called Marcel Brands in the summer from PSV Eindhoven, a real smooth, savvy operator on the European stage, and he's just been appointed to the board, so all the onus is on him now in terms of recruitment. And he sort of has to go and unearth these gems and sell them on for bigger money if we're to reinvest that and kick on again. But, you know, I have sympathy with Marco Silva. I think a lot of Evertonians will be against him right now, and rightly so to in many ways. But he's come in after Sam Allardyce and picked up a real Frankenstein of a squad. You've got players in there from Ronald Koeman's era. You've still got people in there even from David Moyes' era, when you think about Jagi Elkin and Coleman. Sam Allardyce's players, I mean, Theo Walcott, £20 million wasted.
Well, Dave, on that point, someone made an interesting point to me over the weekend, that if you're an agent, the first club you go to in the Premier League must be Everton, because the amount of money you've spent trying to get managers, players, and the overspending on managers and players is ridiculous. Do you feel like you're just you're an easy target, and you're getting ripped off, you know, for some of the managers and the payoffs and the players that you've had to get in and get out?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's like the Emperor's New Clothes. It's like we've won the lottery and turned up at Harrods and everybody's just saying to us what you want, and we're saying, yeah, I'll have that and that without really thinking about it. And, you know, the Liverpool Echo up here released a really interesting piece last week on the wages that Everton have on their fringe players or players who are on loan. And we've got the likes of Yannick Bolasie, who's been on loan at Villa, by all accounts done really poorly, and he's still on 75k a week. We're still paying that. You've got Sandro Ramirez, who we got in, who everybody was really excited about, and he's on 120k a week and can't score a goal in Spain. Yeah.
Robin, 120 grand?
Robbing a living.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And the worst one for me is Morgan Schneiderlin, who can't get a game for love nor money, and he's on the same team.
He's done what him? Yeah. Wow. Oh, wow.
He did well.
So, and then you look at the Rooney experiment, bringing him back. There was a lot of sentimentality in that, and it just didn't work at all. Albeit he was our top goal scorer last season, which tells you everything you need to know, really.
Wow. I'm just seeing as well that apparently Marco Silva and Everton have just turned down a £21 million bid for Idrissa Gueye for PSG. So they're trying to make some of that money back, it seems. Josh, I know you like Silva. Is he doing...
Whoa. Basically, that means Jordan doesn't like him.
I didn't say that.
I've been saying it for a while.
I've got question marks over there. Let's leave that. How much of this season's, I suppose failure, maybe a harsh word to use, but how much of what's happening this season at Everton is he responsible for, in your view?
I think it's a little bit too early to give a proper critique of Silva. I think he's underperforming with the squad that he has. But they have, like you said, sometimes they play really well and sometimes they don't play well. So you can see that there's potential for them to be a good team. But I mean, he's only been there 6-7 months and like, I'm willing to give him a bit more time. You told us that I like Silva. I have a question mark next to Silva.
Yep.
Like, I think that he came to the Premier League, he did well at Hull. He went to Watford, he had a really good first spell, and then it kind of tailed out after he got linked with Everton. So it's like, not really sure whether he's a good manager or he's not a good manager. And then this season, he hasn't really impressed me. I would say that.
Okay.
But I would say that the Everton situation is a little bit similar to Man City before they brought in Tiki.
Yeah.
Man United for the last 4 or 5 years, where you have a bunch of money and you want to spend in order to be successful, but you don't have the correct structure in place. So the correct structure, Marco Silva is a question mark for me, because like, he's not getting the performances on the pitch. So maybe he could be a problem in terms of the manager, but also in terms of the recruitment, as
Dave
has already pointed out, is that whole bought backroom team is like the players that they go for. Like Everton, right? Like, Man United wanted to offload Schneiderlin and no one wanted him. Everton came and gave us like 25 million for him and paid them 120k. Do you know what I mean? So it's a little bit like, nobody, who would have wanted Walcott really, like, and gave him like really good wage.
Yeah.
Right? So I feel like they need to fix that issue off the field, which they may have done bringing in this brands from PSV. And then, so it's going to take a bit of time, but as we saw with Man City, once they fixed those issues, then the money really went far. And they ended up winning titles.
Clinton, we've just been bashing your team, Newcastle, all night. Is it more frustrating, do you think, being an Everton fan, in terms of 1 week they're really good, the next week they're really poor, that inconsistency? Or with your team, at least we know your team's rubbish, so you know, at least we know what we're getting from you. At least you know what you're getting. Whereas for Everton fans, it must be, I think, almost more annoying in that they're so good 1 week and then they're so poor the 2 weeks following. Do you think that it's more annoying being an Everton fan, or are you just the lowest of the low at the moment?
Clinton was off the hook.
I know why you bring me on this pod, just to make yourself feel good, isn't
it? My team's on the other, you know,
your
what I mean,
team's doing terrible, but who can I bring on here who makes me feel good? I don't even bring a Newcastle fan on this.
Yeah, basically. Yeah.
Alright, cool. Nah, I get what you're saying without all the disses to my team, but Everton are moving like a Newcastle with money, to be fair. Let's face it, because
as you said, 1 week they're good, 1 week they're bad. And what's making it even worse, that the team down the road is doing so well. So
I was going to come to that, yeah.
Yeah, it must be like a double-edged sword. But yeah, it's just like that. But
Sorry, go on, Clinton.
No, I was just going to say louder, this is, man, it's hurting me right now.
Sorry. I mentioned earlier on, they've got some good players there, Gabriel. Yeah. I think Pickford's a good goalkeeper. Yeah. I think Digne is a good left wing back. I think Sigurdsson's a good number 10.
I like Gaye as well.
Gaye is a good midfield. They've got some good players there. Yeah,
Richarlison.
Well, we'll get to him in a second. I want to ask Dave about him in a second. But what do you think is the reason, beyond the structural problems that Josh talks about there, what in your view is the reason why Everton just can't quite... They're not even winning the Everton Cup anymore. That seventh place pretty much was theirs every year. They're not even guaranteed that anymore.
Yeah, I don't... I still look at them as kind of a bit lightweight up front, even though they've kind of brought in a few, and they've got Calvert-Lewin, who I like, but I think he needs a bit of time. Tosin, not really sure about him. Richarlison up front worked for a little while, but it's kind of that thing, like, you know, playing a false number nine or attacking midfielder up front, like it will work against some teams and it won't. I have to say, Everton at Stamford Bridge, Everton actually were one of the best teams that came to Stamford Bridge, and they came and they got a good draw and they played really well and they set up well, and they actually partly created a template for people knowing how to play against us. So in that sense, like, when I saw them, they were good. But yeah, the result, I'd say they need a striker that they can pin themselves on, and I think they just need a bit more consistency. But at the same time, I do think this is something that can come when you try to do a load of transfers all at one time. And in that sense, I'd be willing to give Marco Silva until next season to see if he can kind of pull it together.
Dave, a couple of questions before we wrap up. First of all, Richarlison, how good is he? Is he a guy that you feel could be, you know, a really good... Could he break into that Brazilian team, do you think, for the next World Cup? Is he good enough to get into that squad in a couple of years' time? And secondly, how disappointing was it to get knocked out of the cup on the weekend? Bearing in mind, as I started with, you know, that's pretty much your season done now.
On the Charleston, I think he's a really mercurial talent. Sometimes I look at him and it's a really good point about him playing up front. I think that's where we sort of waste a lot of his attacking ability, because in recent games he's been the only alternative. I mean, we haven't really had a striker since Romelu Lukaku to bang in the goals. So he's been isolated a lot. He's been come up against big physical defenders, and that's not his game. As good as he is aerially when he's getting his head to the ball, you know, we played Bournemouth, for instance, and Steve Cook had him in his back pocket for a lot of the game, and these big physical defenders just seem to overpower him. And the thing that I don't like about him is he's taking some tips from his mate Neymar at Brazil and just goes to ground really easily. and it takes a lot to me. Depending on the Tony's listening to this, they might not agree with that, but when you're in a situation where we've won 2-10 or something like that, you want some more battling qualities than what he's showing in that regard. As a goal scorer, he's probably the best finisher we have at the moment, and when he's in that left wing starting berth, he's brilliant, because he's able to run at defenders, and he's got a lot of pace, he's got a lot of trickery, and he creates chances as well. But I understand Marco Silva's dilemma, because if you don't play him up front, then we don't really have a striker who can score, and then if you're playing him on the left wing, you know, you've got nobody in the middle for him to provide for, so you can understand the dilemma he's got. Regards to your second question, absolutely, it's another indictment of Everton and trophies in recent years. I mean, we haven't won anything since 95, and the Liverpool fans up the road would love to give us a load of stick about that. And I just want to pick up on the point that one of you guys made then about it being much more difficult. It really is. Obviously, living in the city, you'd either red or blue, and with Liverpool, sort of. I mean, I think they'll go on and win the title, and at least, and they, you know, they have a good chance in the Champions League.
No, Dave, no! That can't happen!
No. Well, you know, as any one of you guys, a Man United fan, is that right?
Yeah.
Well, would you rather have win it, City or Liverpool? I think Gary Neville said it's a choice between your wife or your girlfriend or something like
yeah.
that.
Your wife or your daughter. It is a really, really interesting one. And as much as I hate to say it, I'd rather City win it. Because Liverpool have never won the Premier League. And it should stay like that forever.
And you know, you mentioned the Merseyside derby as well. I mean, that was the sucker punch this season. And if we all admit it, really, I still think there's a hangover from... You know, if Jordan Pickford doesn't put his hands up and that ball sails into the cop from Van Dijk, we come out of it with a really credible 0-0 draw. One of the very few teams to get anything at Anfield, and we can kick on then.
I actually think, Dave, if Liverpool do win the Premier League, I think that will be the defining moment of the season. I think that was such a free goal in a derby in the 94th minute, I think it was. I think that will be seen as the kind of the moment that the luck, if anything, was with Liverpool this year. What will you do, just briefly, if Liverpool win the league?
I've already booked a few holidays. the weird thing about that as well, just a little bit of a story. I mean, I was sat in the Liverpool end for that. And it was one of probably the most depressing moments of my life, seeing that ball. Divock Origi as well, who's done absolutely nothing all year for Liverpool. You couldn't write it. They've beaten us in every single way you can think of over the last few years. But just to finish on the FA Cup thing, I mean, it's a poison chalice for us in recent years. Sometimes we haven't taken it seriously. Silva went with his all of his 18 against Millwall, and the set piece defending was just horrendous, and that's the main thing he has to focus on. I mean, we've got three defenders over the height of 6'4", and we're not able to deal with simple crosses from a side that's 19th in the Championship. I mean, come on.
That's pretty bad. Was you there, by the way, on the weekend, the Millwall game?
No, I've done every away game this season, and thankfully pulled out of this one last minute, which was a clever decision all over the show, I think it was.
Listen, Dave, where can people find your podcast?
It's at the Blue Dome FC on Twitter, you just basically search for the Blue Dome on any podcast platform, and you'll find us there, really, or visit thebluedomefc.com.
Dave, you're the man. Cheers for coming on, mate.
Cheers, guys.
Cheers, mate. Take it easy, mate. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Gentlemen, that concludes our podcast tonight. Thanks for coming on, Clinton. Hopefully things get better for Newcastle.
You know what? Clinton, you know what? If it doesn't treat you better, don't come back.
This is the second time.
Seriously, man.
What, do you want me to lie and say it's all great at Newcastle and the football's brilliant and they've got some new kids coming through? You want me to lie? Like what?
Oh, man.
I did say I hope it gets better.
Even that's patronising.
I don't believe you.
Jordan, I think you need to do a podcast about Arsenal and make sure Clinton's there.
Depressing. Josh and G, cheers for coming on the pod this week. Do not forget to subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Spotify, or on all the socials. Also, until next week, peace.